Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. Something strange happened last night in the House of Representatives to the proposed new federal budget. It was defeated. Almost everyone had expected passage, but when the votes were tallied, the budget for fiscal year 1980, which begins October 1st, had lost on a vote of 213 to 192. So, back to committee goes the budget. Mariah McLaughlin reports.
The Democratic Party leadership in the House will study the printout of the vote of the budget resolution today to try to see why, after working on the measure for a good part of yesterday, making few changes in the $548 billion spending plan, the House then rejected it. There was no pattern to the voting either for or against the bill. Conservatives and liberals were heavy on both sides. The Burton brothers, both from California, both liberal Democrats from adjoining districts, ended up on different sides. There was speculation that some felt the defense spending levels were too low. Others worried the deficit was too high. Some Republicans were unhappy there would be no tax cut. But no one really knew what had happened. Said the chairman of the Budget Committee, Robert Gimo, "It beats me." Mariah McLaughlin, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Some hours earlier, the Senate approved a slightly smaller budget on a vote of 62 to 36. The House also took a negative view yesterday of a pay raise for members of Congress. After first approving the idea by voice vote, the House later turned it down on a roll call vote of 219 to 191. However, because of an oversight by critics of a pay increase, the measure remains technically alive, and in theory at least, it could be brought up again. Ever since the issue of Soviet troops in Cuba materialized, the Carter administration has been maintaining, in one way or another, that there is no connection between that issue and Senate ratification of the new Treaty on Limitation of Strategic Arms. But now, as we hear from CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint, talk of a connection is cropping up again.
After a briefing by presidential advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger told reporters yesterday that there is definite linkage between those Soviet forces in Cuba and the passage by the Senate of SALT II.
This is something also for the Soviet Union to consider.
Do you think they are seriously considering the effect on SALT of having those troops there?
I don't see how they can avoid it. I think if the Soviet Union is not willing to meet our concerns with respect to a combat presence, that's certainly one of the factors that's going to affect senators.
It was not completely clear whether this linkage is only Kissinger's view or is now shared by high officials in the Carter administration. But it is clear that almost 2 weeks of negotiations between Soviet Ambassador Dobrynin and Secretary of State Vance have produced no visible progress on the issue. The president and his advisors are now known to be looking for other ways to pressure Moscow, and suspending the drive for SALT in the U.S. Senate is an available option. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
Secretary Vance is scheduled to hold another meeting with Ambassador Dobrynin this afternoon. Vance yesterday worked out a tentative agreement with Israeli and Egyptian officials on peacekeeping in the Sinai Desert following Israeli withdrawal, and Bernard Kalb has details.
Vance emphasized that the agreement was tentative, that all three governments, Egypt, Israel, and the U.S., would have to approve it, and that the Carter administration would also seek congressional approval. But U.S. officials seem hopeful that the compromise package would ultimately win endorsement. For the United States, the new peacekeeping arrangement would involve a greater American role than had been anticipated when Prime Minister Begin and President Sadat signed the peace treaty last March. For one thing, that contingent of about 200 American civilians now in the Sinai on monitoring duty would stay on. That force was put in place in 1975, was due to be pulled out next January. Also, the U.S., which was committed to continued aerial reconnaissance of the Sinai, would now step up the number of such surveillance flights. Under the tentative agreement, Egypt and Israel would join in peacekeeping duties, and there's also the possibility that the U.N., if it agrees, would supply a force of truce observers. In short, the three sides have now come up with a peacekeeping arrangement of their own. This necessitated by the Soviet Union's opposition to using the U.N. emergency force for that job. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The Soviet Union and China fought their opening skirmish in the U.N. General Assembly yesterday, and Richard C. Hottled reports that China clearly won, at least for the moment.
The point in dispute, the issue of Cambodia, came up in two ways. The countries of Southeast Asia want the assembly to debate the situation there. China and Western nations agree. They described Vietnamese intervention, continuing warfare, and impending famine in Cambodia as a threat to international peace. The Soviet Union and its friends called it an internal matter, not rightfully a subject for UN debate. The Soviet objection was voted down. So was another effort in the Assembly's Credentials Committee to have the credentials of the pro-Chinese Pol Pot group declared invalid. The Russians argued that Pol Pot was a monster to start with and had been overthrown last January. The majority replied that Pol Pot still legally represents Cambodia and that he had been overthrown by the Vietnamese army. There's no doubt that the Soviet bloc will try to overturn these committee decisions when the full Assembly reviews them tomorrow. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Representatives of China and Vietnam met in Peking today for the 12th session of their peace talks, but as usual, no progress was reported and the talk was less of peace than war. Each side accused the other of plotting a new conflict in that part of the world and of trying to dominate Cambodia and Laos. California's former Governor Ronald Reagan, who has not yet formally announced his candidacy for the 1980 Republican presidential nomination, made a political appearance last night at a reception for delegates to Florida's presidential preference convention. Bruce Hall in Orlando tells us about it.
The convention's non-binding straw ballot in November will be the first major public test of the strength of the various GOP candidates. Reagan is believed to hold a solid lead among delegates in Florida, but there has been increasing concern in the Reagan camp about the very active campaign being run by former Texas Governor John Connally. Polls show Connally is a strong second behind Reagan here and may be gaining strength. Republican political leaders here say Reagan needs an impressive victory in a state where most Republicans are conservative, elderly, and business-oriented. And Reagan's appearance before the convention delegates is seen as an attempt to solidify his support and show his interest, even though he has not officially announced his candidacy. Reagan forces also want to make certain that other conservative Republican candidates are not able to pick up any of their delegates. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Orlando.
President Carter's political advisors in Washington are saying that Mr. Carter will not advance the formal announcement of his candidacy for renomination because of the apparent challenge by Senator Edward Kennedy. They say the president is not planning much campaign-style traveling before November. From London now, Mike Lee reports the latest on the conference on Zimbabwe-Rhodesia.
British Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington is holding separate meetings today with the two opposing sides in the Rhodesian conference, in hopes of making progress before the weekend toward a revised Rhodesian constitution. Rhodesian Prime Minister Bishop Abel Muzawewa has announced he'll return to Salisbury in a couple of days to attend the government business there, and his departure is being interpreted by some here as a sign the conference is failing. Even Muzawewa's adversary, Zimbabwe-Rhodesian Patriotic Front leader Joshua Nkomo, has flown off to Brussels to meet with a group of socialist leaders there, sympathetic to the guerrilla struggle. There is some cause for optimism, however. Former Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Smith, who is a member of Muzawewa's government delegation, is quoted as saying he does not intend to dig his heels in on the crucial issue of modifying the traditional blocking or veto power given to whites in the Rhodesian Parliament. Smith did stop short of saying he endorses the British plan, which proposes that fewer whites be elected to the Parliament and that whites give up control over the armed forces. For the moment, the issue remains deadlocked. Mike Lee, CBS News, London.
The price of gold is on the upswing again today in Europe. It's trading in both London and Zurich at better than $378 an ounce. Both the dollar and the British pound are down. The dollar is at its lowest level against the Swiss franc in 10 months, and in Frankfurt it fell below 1.80 West German marks for the first time in 11 months. It lost more than a yen in Tokyo. Yesterday, Chemical Bank, the nation's sixth largest, raised its prime rate to a record 13.25%. That's the rate it charges its largest corporate borrowers. A Syrian military spokesman says Syrian jet fighters clashed yesterday with Israeli planes over southern Lebanon. The spokesman claims all Syrian aircraft returned safely to base and does not say whether any Israeli planes were shot down. Israel is declining to comment on the Syrian report.